This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Wilbert Roget, and it is so much fun to have a chance to talk again. This time, we'll be talking about your soundtrack for a game that's in development, Anew, The Distant Light, and Will, it's great to catch up with you again.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you too.
This is such an intriguing game. A child is launched into space from our dying Earth and lands on an alien moon, hopefully with an eye toward being able to support life. And, you know, it's like humanity's only salvation. And how did you get attached to the team? How were you the one that was chosen to do the music?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, I had just released Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris. And I guess one of the, I can't even say who it is because there's only two people working on this game, but like one of the two of them, Jeff, he's kind of been handling a lot of the content side, and he emailed a bunch of different game composers whose music he enjoyed, I think mostly orchestral in nature. And apparently he said that he really liked the fact that my Temple of Osiris score had sort of an emotional side to it, and it was very orchestral, but also kind of like modern orchestral, like not necessarily doing a typical, let's say, romantic kind of era thing, but it had some sort of challenging bits to it as well. And he knew that music would be very important for telling a news story, because there's pretty much no dialogue, and everything is told through environmental storytelling. So he wanted a composer that could use the orchestra but take it in kind of a different direction than might be typical for a sort of Metroidvania or even like action game generally. So yeah, he emailed me, and all I remember is he sent me some game footage, very little bits, where it was just like that landing scene, the first thing you see when you get out of the ship, and showing some of the day-night cycle. And I just thought, this is one of the most gorgeous pieces of artwork that I've ever seen in a game. And at the time, I really wanted to have some kind of a indie project that was quite artful, like something that I could sort of have the freedom to express, I guess, some of those musical techniques that you learn in college and you think you'll never use ever again. I really wanted to try that, because I've been doing all of these Star Wars games for years, and then Lara Croft, and I think at the time Dead Island as well. And it was all, there were projects that I really enjoyed, but they weren't, they had challenges, but it was a different kind of challenge to score those games. And there was something that I wanted to try that was a little bit more left field, a little bit more downtown music, if you will, and just sort of different from the way that, I guess you could say, that AAA scores tends to gravitate away from the cinematic, but to something that's just a little bit more challenging, I guess, and unique on the listener.
Yeah, and it totally is. And you mentioned that you kind of chose examples of really some of the most interesting 20th century classical composers, Stravinsky and Bartok and Debussy, and then contemporary composers like Einar Juhani Rautavaara, who is this amazing composer from Finland, and then John Adams. And the way that you sort of cherry-picked their sound and then embedded it in yours is just, it's fascinating to listen to, because I can hear these little flickers, but it really sounds like your music. So it's it's really cool. So did they just sort of turn you loose and let you find your own direction with the music?
Well, as the story goes, normally you start a game, and if they're sending you any reference tracks, then what it's going to be. It's going to be, something by Hans Zimmer, probably something from the Bourne trilogy, and it's kind of Conan, Barbarian, whatever, and you kind of have a lot of that. And that's always fun to work on, but in this case, another reason why I signed up for the project was he said, oh, yeah, I'll send you some reference. It was like Bartok music for strings, percussion, and celeste. And it was, all this 20th century art music, John Adams harmony there. And I was like, okay, so there's something going on with this project that's very unique. It turns out that Jeff was an orchestral trombone player. And he's quite the musician himself, in addition to being a sound designer and artist and animator and just you name it, story writer. It's kind of crazy just how much this guy does. But you know, that was kind of the point where I said, okay, yeah, I really need to work on this project specifically, because, you know, I mean, this is composers that I'd studied all throughout college. I knew that Jeff was a huge Bartok fan, and I personally quite fond of Debussy. And I think what ended up happening was I kind of took my Debussy sort of instinct, I guess, and then kind of moved a little bit more overtly towards the Bartok side of things. And that kind of mismatch is sort of what laid the groundwork for the orchestral music in the game. And then from there, different pieces kind of took on different influences. I think another bit, and this is kind of interesting, like as the game kind of progressed, I had this moment where I realized, okay, yeah, this music might seem somewhat unique if you really peer into it, but at the end of the day, it's still just orchestral music. And that's the point where I said, you know what, I'm going to go back and revise a little bit and add as much sound design and synthesizer elements as will make sense. So that's where all of the classic sort of Moog style and, you know, 60s type synthesizer elements came in. Because I wanted something that was a little different and kind of came out of left field once again, but gave that sense of space and space travel, and it's almost like a retro future aspect to it.
That's exactly the feeling that I got from it, that track, The Mission, because it really has that kind of lonely quality that a lot of space soundtracks had in the 60s and the 70s. And, you know, it kind of sounds like it could be almost a lost track from Blade Runner. and so did you actually track down some vintage synthesizers, or is it possible to get that sound with samples now?
You know, it's funny. When I wrote that, I didn't have any hardware synthesizers. But ever since I did or started working on the Destiny score, I started collecting a bunch of different things. I'm actually going to resequence that track to use some of the vintage stuff that I have now, because it's like, you know, it has this sort of specific analog sound that you can sort of fake it with, you know, the software synthesizers. They've come a really long way and they sound incredibly good now. But there's just sort of a character to it. It's almost like the difference between recording a real orchestra versus using samples. And so, yeah, like at some point I will redo that with some of the Moog synths and Korg and these kind of classic sounds that I have now.
Yeah, is it kind of like, there's this whole debate about whether digital sound or LPs are better, and maybe
Right.
it's the same kind of thing. There's kind of a warmth to the vintage synths and like a real quality that you just can't reproduce with the digital samples and reproductions of these synthesizers.
Yeah, absolutely. And also they're just so much fun to use. I mean, you can physically manipulate the hardware and the knobs and sliders and levers and whatnot, and you really feel like you're a part of the music and performing.
Oh, that is so cool. The palette that you put together is, I've never heard a soundtrack like this. You've got steel drums and a marimba and a bass flute, and it's perfect because it really kind of drives home the idea that we're not anywhere near Earth and this is a really alien environment. So how much experimentation did you do to round up those particular instruments and get that sound?
Yeah, I mean, first off, thanks. I mean, I love the fact that people are thinking that this is unique. That's exactly what I was going for. But I guess the axiom that I keep coming back to is that this is a planet that's been there for quite a while. And as you find out, as the game progresses, they have their own civilization. It's its own thing. It's not really Wild West at all, you eventually find out. And they have their own things going on, which I can't talk about, but interesting, shall we say, goings on. And what I wanted to do was I wanted the music to make sense, but also be extremely foreign and different and weird. So that's why I use a lot of these 20th century techniques. That's why, and the first thing I said actually was like, and this is when I first was thinking, okay, I need an alien theme, alien planet theme. I said, I need to take the strangest interval, the strangest rhythms, and the most bizarre combination of instruments and textures or whatnot. And that's going to be the backbone of this theme. So the first thing I did was I said, all right, strangest interval, tritone. So I, what I actually did, it's kind of funny, there's this Debussy string quartet, and it kind of follows the rhythm and contour of the very beginning of the Debussy string quartet, but with, these warped textures and harmonies. So it starts with this descending tritone, like doo doo, bum, doo 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 doo, this weird quintuplet rhythm, and everything's just very jagged and awkward and strange. And the flute and steel drum, I'm not really sure where that came from, but a lot of times when I'm working on this game, I'll just look at some footage or maybe screenshots, and then just kind of close my eyes and kind of imagine stuff, and whatever, kind of random images, sonic images come through, and then I just try my best to replicate that in real life. And
Wow.
that's sort of where the steel drum and bass flute duet came in.
Thank you. It's just such an amazing sound. A couple nights ago, John Oliver, he had a bagpiper and an accordion, and he said, yep, they go together like Pop-Tarts and fish. And, but I love, well, first of all, that image, but it just sort of, it made me wonder if there were any challenges, you know, blending these instruments together and making them play nicely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the fun of mixing a score is, you know, you kind of take all these disparate elements and you say, all right, well, what's going to be my mid-range? What's going to be my, like, highs and bass and whatnot? In fact, if I remember correctly, originally it was just a regular flute. I mean, I played it myself, and I do not play the bass flute, but I think I played it an octave higher than what you hear. And I tried to make it work, and it just didn't sound right. And so I just muted the flute and moved on. Later on, I revised the track to be a little bit longer because that landing scene ended up being a bigger deal than it was originally. And I just thought, well, wait a minute, what if I just take this down an octave? Maybe that'll work. And so, yeah, I just, in my DAW, I just pitched it down an octave, and now it blends perfectly with the steel drum. So you're always kind of doing different little tricks and techniques like that. And another interesting thing is that the steel drum isn't really played in a typical fashion, but it's got this weird sort of delay on it. It's got like an echo. So you never really hear throughout the score, you never hear it just playing like boom. Instead, it's always like boom, 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 boom. You know, it's always got this very over the top kind of effect on it. That's sort of something that I wanted to use to make it sound even more alien. And it's kind of an alien instrument on its own as well. I mean, this is something that the Western world, you know, never heard until, you know, however many, you know, decades and or maybe even centuries ago that, you know, I guess in Trinidad, they came up with the instrument. And it sounds so different from pretty much anything else. But again, it has its own culture and its own history. And so it kind of makes sense in its own different way.
Yeah, it totally does. And it's, like you say, it just really drives home the fact that we're in an alien world. And were you able to use live musicians at all besides yourself for the music?
So eventually, yes. But for now, it's just me. So the mission track actually is rescored in several different arrangements. The first version actually that I did was a brass sextet. And so that one, I had a few musicians from the Lara Croft score, actually. James Nagus is our horn player. And just to, because, you know, brass sextet does not sound very good in samples. So I didn't want, even for demo purposes, I didn't want that to go into the game as is. So I had him record that. But later on, once we're closer to release, then I'll kind of put together proper scores and have everyone, kind of basically the whole Lara Croft crew is going to be on it, most likely. You know, Doug Perry on percussion and Kristen Nagus on all the different woodwinds that we have, and so on. Mateus Souza probably on violin. And I also wanted to do a lot with the double bass in this score, solo double bass and doing some interesting things. And then, of course, cello. I'll have some live cello as well.
That sounds amazing. It's just, it must be so exciting to know that you've got this crew of really fabulous musicians that you can call on, and they're just going to bring it all to life. That's really cool.
Oh, I'm so ridiculously spoiled with the musicians in my life. It's absurd. You know, this actually has nothing to do with the new, but I have to mention it. I just did a game jam last weekend. It was like a Halloween-themed game jam with the same team that I've been working with for the last 6 years. Space Octopus Studios. They just did Do You Copy the previous year. And this year we did like basically you work in a video store, but then you find out that you're actually being kidnapped into this like evil game show of some kind. And it's a 48-hour game jam. So we only have 2 days to do the whole thing. But once I got out of that kickoff meeting and, you know, we decided what game we wanted to do, I said, like, you know what? I'm going to write live big band and choir music, and we're going to find a band and we're going to just do it. And
wow.
Which is absurd because it means, well, number one, I have to find players who can just do stuff like now on the weekend, and number two, I have to write it absurdly quickly. So, you know, I woke up the next day, I don't know, way earlier than I normally do, and went to the, you know, local diner to get breakfast and score stuff out like on paper. And while I was scoring, once I kind of figured out what we wanted to do and, you know, finish writing out all the music, then immediately I'm like texting all my friends being like, all right, who can I get, come on, who's not busy today. And so yeah, we had John Robert Matz on trumpet, and Nick Toretta on alto and tenor saxophone, and Doug Perry once again on drums. John, Doug, and I all kind of sang in the choir, and it was real weird, but it came together. Actually, it actually, you know, miraculously, we were able to do this entire score in basically 24 hours.
That's amazing. And what a cool thing. I mean, that must be like a completely different discipline to, you know, start to finish in such a short time span, as opposed to something like Anu, which has been in development for what now, like a year and a half almost, right?
Much more than that, so. Actually. I mean, I've been involved since 2015, maybe.
Oh, wow.
But it had been going on, I think, for a year and maybe even more before that. So we've had a long time to kind of live in this world. And it is very different. I mean, in the game jam situation, you basically just go with your first instinct and just kind of get stuff out as quickly as possible. You try not to make like errors or whatever, but you don't worry too much about like, oh, is this exactly the correct whatever? Is this, you know, I did all of the horror music, because there's the jazz music and then also horror music. I did it all in about an hour.
Wow. Like,
and I told myself, all right, no computer effects, no, you know, software synthesizers, just use only my synth table. And I literally just kind of hit record and did a bunch of stuff and cut it all together. And that's all the horror music. So it is a different mindset. It's more about finding like the right sort of sound field and then just going with it. And, you know, whatever you come up with is great, cool, and you move on. Whereas with Anu, I mean, you know, every track that I've done on this game has taken me an absurdly long time to write. It's preposterously long that I spend on every single thing. And the reason why is because, you know, I'll write what I think it should be, and then I'll kind of, you know, listen to it with the visuals or whatever. And then it kind of has this growing process. Every single track has this growing process where I kind of listen to it and then I think, well, you know, this kind of sounds like this other timbre, and then I'll add that other timbre. And then, oh, this sort of reminds me of that. And then I'll add that timbre. And then it just kind of keeps going and going until I feel like it satisfied every sort of thing that I could possibly think should work for the track. It's just quite difficult in that it's not really constructed in the typical way that you might, you know, put together a game score. Like I'm not really even thinking of it as an orchestral score, really. The orchestra is just sort of one part of this whole, a new kind of texture that we're trying to create with it.
Well, one of the cues that I really, really love that you sent me is the boss battle, the Angel of Order, because that is a really cool orchestral track, and I can so hear you channeling John Adams in it. It's so cool, and I love how it starts with this like sword shing when the boss comes out, and I know when I get to play the game, that's going to be like a jump scare kind of almost, because it just sounds like the boss kind of pops out of nowhere. But I love how you sort of assimilated all of the rhythmic drive of John Adams and then wove this other cue around it. So was that another one that took a lot of experimentation to get just the way you wanted it?
You know, so there's this piece and then a couple things from Lara Croft and probably others that I've written, certainly some in Call of Duty, where it's like I had some vague idea and maybe wrote it out on paper. And this one I wrote pretty much the whole thing out on paper before I even touched the sequencer. But it, like, something about either the direction of the pieces or the complexity meant that it really needed like a significantly better composer than me to actually write it, like to actually make it sound like music. And so it's sort of this uphill struggle. But, you know, that's kind of one of those things that makes music such a fantastic art form, is that, you know, you can go to, say, a recital or something, piano recital, whatever, and you'll see some pianist and he's, you know, he or she is playing a piece, and if they're so good that this is like nothing to them, that's not really all that interesting. But what you really want to see is a player playing a piece that's like just slightly too hard. like just slightly too hard. So you can see that struggle, and that's sort of what these definitely are, especially this one. Again, quite a while for it to work and to come together, but I'm really glad that that I'd taken that risk, and that this is a project where I can spend a good amount of time. There's another piece that I don't think I'd sent yet. It's like an asteroids cue where I basically took this concept, but then like an even further, and it's just probably the most wieldy orchestral piece that I think I've ever written. It's just like so just over the top, ridiculously difficult. But, it works for Anew because, again, it's not about comfortable music, but it's about, this sort of challenge, as a composer and also as a listener. And so that's sort of where this all kind of comes together.
What's so cool about it, and what I just love about the 20th century and contemporary composers that you've chosen to kind of embed in your own music is, I hear a lot with in my radio program, there's this resistance to 20th century music. And I think hearing it in this kind of context, it's a lot less scary for people. It's a lot more palatable because eventually, it'll be in the world of the game. And so I think you're doing a real service to people who might be a little wary of Bartok and Stravinsky and having them realize that, no, it's living music. And here's kind of a new way to hear it.
Yeah, that's something that I debated all throughout college was, why is it that, and everyone has their own theories, which, varying degrees of accuracy. Some people will say, oh, it's so dissonant, they don't want to hear that dissonance. But it's like, well, you hear dissonant music all the time in film, in like Jimi Hendrix, it's not like you can take like a dissonant dowsing rod and say like, oh, this piece is more modern than the other. And it's more like, I think, especially in the 20th and 21st centuries, listeners want to be able to easily place an emotion with music. They want the music to sort of evoke something. Whereas in previous eras, music was more about the sort of game of, okay, the composer has created this seed, this da-da-da-da, and now it's a game of like, okay, well, what are they going to do with it? How are they going to develop? And that's why in classical music, which again, I think a lot of modern listeners struggle with, because it used to be more about growing that seed into, a fully developed piece of music. And then you can, from 1 minute to the next, it's just like, oh, now the Fifth Symphony is happy. Ba, 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 ba. And just, now it's sad again. And then now it's angry, and it's just kind of this sort of manic, exchange of different emotions. But in the modern era, we want to, press play on an album, and it does, maybe it's like an EDM thing, so it has this constant emotion, it has this constant drive, maybe it's ambient, maybe it's whatever genre, but we're more about that connection of music to one specific and digestible emotion. So I think that's probably why my taking this, you know, very 20th century palette, but still putting it in the context of a cinematic, you know, game score. I think that's why it kind of bridges that gap a little bit easier than if they were to, you know, sit down to like a modern, you know, if like they were to like sit down to like a Babbitt concert or something, and they would be like, what is this, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I love how you incorporated Stravinsky and Bartok in Takeoff and Stasis too,
because
their orchestral colors, both of them, you know, Stravinsky like with the Firebird, and then Bartok with, you know, the strings, percussion, and celesta. And yeah, I mean, the way that you incorporated those is really cool. And the Takeoff itself is just absolutely thrilling.
Yeah, you know, funny story about that. So the beginning was, it's just this stacked fourths kind of thing where like the perfect fourth interval, I just kind of, you know, one instrument group after another, it just kind of stacks on top and just layers this big sound as, you know, the ship is taking off or whatever, and it kind of grows to this huge crescendo. And that, I think, was actually a bit of a, not a reference, but like sort of a nod to this arrangement that I did for OC Remix. There was like a Final Fantasy VI album, and they asked me to do the opening track, Omen, sort of like the very first piece you hear in FF6. And it has a similar technique. So this is sort of a little bit of a nod to that. But then the second half, where it has that sort of very sweet, like dolce, quiet piano melody, that was actually the second movement of my senior project from college.
Wow.
Yeah, that sort of like, that was the second movement of my senior project piece. And what I thought, the reason I incorporated that was it had that sort of Debussy style way of dealing with harmony as these like pivoting chords that they don't necessarily have anything to do with each other in the traditional harmony. But the way that he works with harmony is he basically says like, all right, here's my chord. It's usually a seventh of some kind. And then he'll take one note from that chord and then a completely different one. But because that one note is in both chords, it sort of fits. Like you accept the transition as a listener. And so it kind of used that technique, but, you know, just with a lot of different weird effects and processing and whatnot on the timbres.
Yeah, and the whole palette, the way it sounds is just, again, you know, you have the excitement of the takeoff, and then kind of what I imagine it would be like after that, just this quiet and stillness. So that's, yeah, it's a very, very effective track. And that is for the opening cinematic, where we learn that this child is being shot into space, and hopefully everything will be okay.
Yeah, and actually, now that I'm remembering, that was the first thing I ever wrote for this game. And I wrote it before they did that intro sequence. They actually like animated the intro to my music. If I remember correctly, I just kind of had this idea of like, oh, well, wait, maybe there might be like a takeoff scene or something in this game. So I kind of just freehand wrote out this piece, and I just had like, okay, well, maybe I'll start it off with some like busy kind of, you know, loud stuff for the, you know, the rockets blasting off or whatever. And then it'll gradually go into the more peaceful, and Dolce piano melody, just to kind of get us into the space idea. And then Jeff, he heard that and he was like, yeah, cool, I'm going to do that now. And he created the whole, it's actually the same, now that I'm thinking about it, that's the same as with Call of Duty World War II. In the main theme, I just kind of wrote it. You know, I never saw any animation or anything. And then they animated it to, or maybe not animated, but they edited it to the music that I wrote.
Wow, that's so cool. It's so amazing when that happens, because it's always great to have the music, especially with a story like Anew and clearly a story like Call of Duty, have the music kind of driving the emotion. That's very cool. And you've mentioned Debussy as an influence, and there's a beautiful lullaby for the version that I have is for piano. And that, I don't know what it is, but it just sounds very, very French. It's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, I never really understood why, but I just whenever I'm not trying to do the big action or whatever, and I'm kind of just sitting at a keyboard and kind of noodling around, it always sounds very French for some reason. Like, I guess, you know, I grew up playing, every pianist, and that's my main instrument when I grew up, you know, every pianist has studied Chopin and Debussy and maybe a little Ravel. And I guess that's kind of where that all came from. If I remember correctly, I think I just kind of did it. I don't think and once again, like, I don't think we necessarily had a plan or anything. I think it was just, they made reference to these sort of narrative spaces where you can find out more about what's actually going on in the world. And I remember I saw something like that and I was like, wouldn't it be kind of cool? Because, you know, this is a character who's like, not grown up, because that's too organic. Like, he's been like germinated or whatever in this pod while flying through space for like 27 years. And so I was like, well, what if we had this melody that's like a lullaby, but it's a little bit subverted, because it's like, well, you know, how can you really have parents when you've grown up your entire life in like a pod? Because it's like, you know, it's taking you 27 years to go from that ship launch where you're a baby until, you know, gameplay starts when you're a fully grown man. So that's kind of where that all came from. And then I sent that to Jeff and he really liked it. And so I decided to do a couple other versions. There's like a music box version that you can see in the trailer. And then there's a couple instances where we hint at it just throughout the game in like these narrative spaces and different increasingly bizarre orchestrations and whatnot.
These little hints just make me more and more eager to play this game. It just sounds amazing. And it's an open world game. So did you create like musical identities, kind of, you know, unique musical signatures for the different areas?
Yeah. And that was kind of one of the most interesting challenges, is that they would come to me with these different areas. I forget exactly how many, but each one has its own musical identity. And the challenge I gave to myself was like, okay, make it sound undeniably like this is the ice and water level. This is the cave level. This is the, you know, whatever level. But don't use typical stereotypes. So it still has to sound like this. And listeners have to, you know, it has to really be reinforced. Like, yes, I am out in the desert, you know, with, you know, all this other stuff, but it's not in the typical way that you would associate with that, which is actually a really difficult task if you think about it, to like avoid stereotypes that still make it very obvious. But the way that we're structuring the implementation is that as soon as you get into these areas, it just plays the track in full. There's no like dynamic switching of like action versus ambient or anything. It just kind of plays it. And, you know, if you get into combat, then that's like, it just kind of continues. But it doesn't loop. And instead, we have this sort of playlist of what we would call B-sides, where, you know, after the main track is finished, then, you know, like a minute or two or three or whatever passes by where it's just silent. You can enjoy the sounds of the world. And then every once in a while, it just plays these shorter 20, 30 second little bits that are, again, not loops, just sort of one shots. They kind of just hint back at the musical ideas of the main track. We wanted it not to be just music in your face, you know, constantly, but instead just kind of hint at it when needed. So that's kind of how music works in this whole open world scene.
That is such a great way of handling it because, yeah, if the music is playing all the time, then it's just sort of wallpaper in the background. And it not only that, it's a lot for you to write. So it sounds like this was kind of a good compromise. And then when the music comes back, it'll be really noticeable. So that's a really good way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we're still experimenting with it. So everything could potentially change. But yeah, this is sort of the direction that we're going with for now.
Yeah, there's a really cool cue, the planes. And we mentioned this amazing Finnish composer, Aino Juhani Rautavaara. And the piece that I know best by him is the Cantus Arcticus. He went up to the Arctic Circle and recorded birds. Mm. And then he wrote orchestral music around that. And the planes really, really reminded me of that because I could hear like little flutterings of birds. And it's such a cool sound world.
Yeah, and that I believe that's the reference. You know, I actually hadn't heard of Rautavaara until Jeff introduced me to him. And what's cool is that I think that he basically just said, all right, well, just have a listen to this, you know, whatever you think. And I think he was leading me into that direction. And then I kind of picked up on like, okay, maybe he wants me to, like, instead of it being sound design like you typically have of like, oh yeah, birds and whatnot, maybe he wants me to do that in the music and in a more refracted sort of way. So what I ended up doing was I recorded the mandolin and guitar, which is sort of like that riff that starts it off, and like a bunch of different takes to get this interesting echo and all that. And the reason why guitar, by the way, is because I thought that was the most like earth-like human instrument, like the most human sound, the most simple kind of thing that you could have. For some reason, to me, that's just guitar, because you have it in every culture. We have it, you know, all around. But then from there, I said, all right, well, we're going to have the orchestra be sort of the weird stuff that, you know, typical a new orchestra. And I kind of just wrote the piece. And then afterwards, I said, all right, now let's add in some of these birds. And I just hit record and took out my flute and just did these little bird tweets over the main part of the track that, you know, start off kind of small and then get more busy as things go on. It's funny, like, they're not really in any key and they're certainly not timed, but for some reason it just kind of works. I'm not really sure even why, but it just sort of fits with the soundscape. Maybe because of effects, maybe because, who knows, but you know, I was really happy with how that turned out, and the visuals in that area, again, as usual, are absolutely gorgeous, and I really love the fact that they've given me the opportunity to sort of augment that and give it meaning with the music. And one of my favorite parts of the piece is that if you kind of pay attention to the middle section where this sort of sweeping violins melody comes in, that's actually the same melody as the mission theme, sort of giving this subtext that, like, okay, yeah, we have all this earth-like vegetation, but it's on an alien planet. It's kind of not supposed to be there, hence some of the sort of harmonies that hint that, like, something might be amiss. And that melody tells you, oh, actually, it's the humans who have, you know, kind of forced this to happen, and it's part of their mission to do that.
That's amazing. That level of storytelling without any dialogue and just doing it with the environment and the music. That's, wow. That's very cool.
This has been sort of my passion project for the last several years. I mean, you know, in the time that I've worked on this, there was, like, you know, Dead Island, Guild Wars, you know, other Star Wars stuff, and, you know, Call of Duty, of course, and,
yeah,
and Destiny. And so all of these different things, but it's all kind of, you know, it's always very refreshing when I'm in between these AAA projects and I have a little bit of time. I'll go back to a new, and it's sort of like, it's almost like boot camp for creativity, because it's like so much, so different from the other scores. And this one and another score, which I would love to talk to you about later on, that I'm working on right now, are very different from Call of Duty in that COD was very intentionally monochromatic, where we basically said, all right, let's figure out the sound, and we want every piece in the game to be that sound, essentially. And, you know, then you kind of go through that and develop it as much as you can. But with Anew, it was more like, you know, yeah, it has like a characteristic to it, but it can kind of go in a lot of different directions. You know, there's a lot, I mean, between like the lullaby, which is so, you know, like there's that Debussyan version that you've heard, but there's also like a, you know, a very quiet and emotional solo guitar version of it. And there's a bunch of other stuff like that. And then there's the typical world music. And then there's this mission theme, which is much more like you almost would expect that I would have written that mission thing for a Call of Duty game rather than this one. So it has a lot of different colors. And it's sort of more like what I would want to do personally as a composer is to have a very multi-timbral score. That's kind of the biggest difference between Anew and something more like Call of Duty, where it's more like very focused and directed.
Yeah, no wonder this is such a fun project.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Like, I honestly had no idea if people would like this at all or if they would just think, this is terrible. Why did you write bad music? Like, what's that all about? Because you have no idea. I mean, it's a brand new IP, but it's also a very weird IP. And I think it's the first time, really, that I've been trusted with, you know, just completely defining the sound of a game from start to finish without any previous reference, no expectations. Almost all the franchise games that I've worked on, I guess with the exception of Guild Wars and Destiny, I have been asked to, all right, here's all this previous stuff, but do something new with it, which is great. That's awesome. But here it's like there's no previous stuff. There's no mandate, no expectation. It's like just completely blank canvas. Which is its own challenge, but you know, I find it incredibly rewarding to work that way.
How can people find out more about Anew, The Distant Light?
Yeah, I think if you just go to our website, it's Anew the Game, and we post very frequently on Twitter, all of our updates and sometimes little screenshots and whatnot. And we just released to live streamers and the press are pre-alpha. So there's some footage actually now of people playing through the game and experiencing sort of not, it's not the game as it will be, but it's sort of, you know, we cut together a couple scenes that they can just kind of play sequentially to get a feel of what the game will be like. So that's all on YouTube and Twitter now. And we also have a Facebook page as well. And that's the best way to sort of keep in touch with the developers and tell us what you think.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I can't wait to see it all finished and hear your music in the game, too. And, Will, it's always fun to talk with you. I really appreciate you taking the time, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.